श्रील प्रभुपाद की। हरे कृष्णा। थैंक यू ऑल फॉर कमिंग टू द सेमिनार। वी इट वॉज क्वाइट सडनली दैट वी decided to have a seminar for today and tomorrow. Last week I was discussing with Mother Krishna Priya and Mother Golokananda Priya, and then we developed this idea that it would be nice to have a seminar, and then we were discussing what should be the topic of the seminar, and then we kind of resolved or decided that we'd have a seminar on relationship. And what is the need for relationship? Why do we need relationship? And that's how we came to this concept of relationship, our ultimate hankering. Everyone is actually hankering for relationship. Why? And how? Why we are hankering for relationship? And then it leads to the next stage. Then if we need relationships, then how we are going to develop relationships? Is it going to happen just like that? Or do we need to make a conscious effort to develop relationship? So these are the two main aspects that we are going to discuss about, and then you'll see how it develops. And time of course is short, just 2 days, and that also just 1.5 hour each day, so practically 3 hours of time we have dedicated to these 2 seminars. And anyway, at least somewhere we are beginning, and let us see how far we can go. Now I'll ask you all, I'll need 4 volunteers. 4 volunteers who are not afraid to speak. Okay, Brandon is one. And we need another one, Guru Gauranga. Very good. Come. And okay, 2 more. Okay, Chintamani. Okay. Okay, we have 4. Good. So the first participant, maybe for the speaker we can get a chair, so that everybody can see the speaker also. Most really, many of you do not know Brandon. Brandon just happened to come here yesterday for the first time. Was it first time? Yesterday. And Brandon is a student in the University of North Carolina in Greensboro. He's from Winston-Salem. He liked it so much, just being here yesterday, that he decided to stay. And so he's going to stay here for 3 days. That's it? Like today is the second day? How are you liking it?
Everything.
Wonderful. So here's the microphone. This is switched on? Hare Krishna.
Actually, I don't need the microphone. Can you all hear me?
Well, if that is your volume, then you don't need a microphone.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Then I think you have to adjust the microphone.
I'll talk to that.
So I will request Brandon to relate to us a memorable relationship in your life that you would like to share with others.
Last summer I met a girl. Actually it was in high school, right before I graduated. And her name was Katie Barrett. And I was attracted to her. And we talked all throughout the summer and discussed and played and attempted to love, but it was very difficult for me because there was something inside me that could not love her. Like I had no idea what it was. And I tried and I kept trying to kind of amp up like the physical relationship of it, but it didn't work. It just made me feel even more hollow. And that hollowness spread to things I saw about her as the summer progressed. And it got the way I looked at her got worse and worse. And it was very saddening for me because I did enjoy her company. But it just wasn't fulfilling. Like, if that makes sense. And so, I guess we shared intimate physical relationship, but it wasn't, it wasn't fulfilling, prisoner love. And eventually I had to part ways. I was going to be parting ways with her anyway because I was going to college, and she was still in high school, she was a year younger than me. So I knew that a goodbye was coming, but I wasn't quite sure how to do that. It was like my first real relationship with anyone. Because I never had any kind of girlfriend or anything like that up until that point in my life, for whatever reason. And it was very difficult for me to let her go. I kept thinking of myself getting drawn back to her over and over, even though I knew it wasn't working and that there was really, like there was nothing left of a relationship that could be salvaged. But I kept kind of wanting her and desiring her. I guess eventually it just kind of culminated and I had to forget her completely. I went off to college and I just stopped thinking about her. And I got caught up in the swell of college life, and that this whole new world was opening up for me, and that's how it just kind of ended. But since then, it's actually been great because I've rediscovered a friendship with her, which has just been marvelous. It's been a marvelous friendship that we developed. I told her about the Krishna consciousness movement and my desire to come to this temple before I came. She supported me 100%. She's more of a Christian God believer, but I think she truly believes, you know, with a heart. So she supported me in my supportive God.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you very much. Thank you. So now we'll request Guru Gauranga, the second speaker, to come forward. So I would like you to analyze why that relationship didn't work at first, but then it developed into a nice and wholesome relationship.
Okay, in the beginning of Brandon's presentation, he mentioned that he said that he was very attracted to her. So the initial relationship was...
I think I switched on.
The initial relationship was spurred on by a body attraction, which is how most relationships these days start anyhow, between man and woman. And then he got to know her and saw that there were certain things about her which he felt were insurmountably incompatible, as he said, that he didn't think that there were parts of her that he could love. And but then as their relationship developed, he was faced with the decision that, you know, since this is not going to be something that lasts for a long time, that being an honest man, he decided that he'd have to break it off with her. But then the real relationship seemed to have kicked in somewhere around either that time or afterwards. And that was seemed to be based on more of her as a person and her personality rather than the physical attraction. So he'd grown to love her in a certain sense rather than just be physically attracted in the hope that things would work out. So that was my assessment.
Thank you. Thank you, Guru. So now I'll call the third speaker, Chintamani. So, do you agree with Guru Gauranga Prabhu's analysis?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So, what will be your perception of this analysis? Why do you agree with his analysis?
I think that ultimately, because we are not the body, if we base the relationship body to body, then it won't last and we will be frustrated. So if we are trying to find a connection with someone on a deeper level, besides just the physical body, and that will find will give you greater happiness and will actually enable you to connect more with that person at a stronger, more internal level, especially if it's spiritual.
Mm. So can you elaborate on that? What's the difference? What is actually bodily relationship? And what is spiritual relationship?
Bodily relationship is selfish. Basically, what can I get out of the relationship from someone? And a spiritual relationship is selfless, and it's wanting to give what you have to the other person, and not thinking so much about what you can get.
Very good. Very good. Now, in the case of Brandon, did he really develop a spiritual relationship with Ketty?
No.
But still, their relationship developed. Why do you think, or how do you think it happened? I can give you a cue that there is an expression, distance makes the heart grow fonder. Right? Now, why is that? Like, it was not quite spiritual. It was on a bodily platform, the relationship, but still, the distance made them more, you know, the relationship became deeper because of that physical distance.
I'm not really sure how to answer that.
Would anybody else like to answer that? Okay, maybe we can ask Brandon to answer it himself, because he have it from the horse's mouth. I mean, I hope you don't mind that expression.
No. The thing is, it wasn't entirely physical. I mean, it wasn't entirely a physical relationship.
At first?
At first, yeah. It was very friendly and happy. We played games together. I mean, there was, you know, there was a lot of joy, but the body relationship did eventually kind of take hold and suck the life out of it.
Did it have something to do with heart? Did it have something to do with heart? Heart?
The relationship?
I'm sorry, it's not, I mean, I didn't mean H-U-R-T, I meant hurt. H-E-A-R-T.
What happened to you?
This relationship that developed when you went to the university and when you left Salem and went to Greensboro.
I think what happened was our physical body separated, and so what I was remembering was the joy that I actually did share and the fun and that kind of the heartfelt feeling I had for it. And so I wanted to put that at least somewhere, and I wanted to get back.
Okay, good, good. So anyone else would like to elaborate, Mother Krishna Priya?
Well, when they were in direct contact, the relationship first began when he said it was very playful, it was very joyful. Almost like the experience that we have when we're children. And we're not thinking about our body and our, we're just, you know, appreciating what we're doing together or the beauty of nature and going on a walk, and everything seems so magical and so wonderful. And then when one gets involved with what they would call the lower chakra, the energy gets pulled down. And then, because there's no satiation to the world from the desires, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, that you start pouring more ghee on the fire and it gets bigger. So as the lust increases, the desires increase, and then the frustration becomes great, and then you feel like, I can't be satisfied. As soon as it all is gone, I can't get no satisfaction. So then, when you were separated, there was that cool down time, and then you were able to again begin to use your intelligence and to remember those other times. So you kind of went through the different modes of nature also. It was like going through, there was some, maybe some goodness, then passion, then ignorance, and then with separation, then there was time for reflection and meditation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mother Krishna Priya. And Mother Lila Shuka also wanted to say something. You wanted to comment?
The comment is simple. I was going to suggest that perhaps the latter relationship that was developed was able to be one that had more respect and appreciation than the initial relationship.
Yeah. Very good. So, now we, again, maybe Lila Shuk, you can elaborate on that point, the one that I asked Chintamani, that she spoke about two kinds of relationship, physical and spiritual, and she mentioned that physical relationships do not work. It's only when the relationships are based on the spiritual foundation then only the relationships get its actual actual dimension, right? So we see that with Brandon, there were two aspects of their relationship. First was, he felt that it didn't work, like it's not going to work. I mean, that means he didn't feel that this relationship is going to last forever. But then when he left and went away, went to the university, they were separated, then this relationship took a more mature or more, you know, developed shape, where they developed friendship, which gave it a bit a beautiful dimension to that. Now, how will you define, you know, this relationship?
How do I define it? In terms of spiritual or God?
If we are taking into this two consideration, bodily relationship and spiritual relationship, like how will you categorize this relationship?
Well, I would say that it's more in relation to the subtle body, that it's more of from the mind, the mental emotional platform, than from the...
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Hey, go on. Elaborate that. Like, mind you, there are many, I believe there are some guests, newcomers here. So, you know, for their sake, maybe you can elaborate on that, like, you know, what do you mean by subtle body relationship?
So, the subtle body is composed of the mind, intelligence, and ego, and it seems to me that the latter relationship, there is less friction with the ego, less focus on the let's have fun, we're really enjoying each other bodily aspect, and more on the platform of respecting the aspects that you appreciate in one another, which I would say is more of a subtle bodily platform.
Very good. Anyway, I'll also add a few points here. Yeah. You see, we have two different types of bodies. We have two different types of material bodies. One is a gross material body, and the other is the subtle material body. The gross material body is this body, made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And beyond that, there is a subtle material body, which is composed of, as you said, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are the three subtle material elements. So, the gross body actually has a network of senses. And the fulfillment of gross bodily relationships are in the gratification of the senses. By deriving some gratification, meaning the senses demand something, senses desire something. And when those desires are fulfilled, then our senses are gratified and we derive some pleasure. And so the gross bodily relationships are based on sense gratification. Say, for example, the senses are craving something, senses are wanting something, and when the senses get that, when those desires are fulfilled, there is some sort of joy, some sort of happiness. And so, as it came out that the first aspect of the relationship was on the gross bodily platform. And then you pointed out that the second aspect of the relationship, or the next aspect of the relationship, when it developed due to the separation, was actually the relationship based on subtle bodily platform. Like on the mental platform, on the intellectual platform, like memories. Like mental means the memories, the recollections are there in the mind. And plus, at that time, Brandon started to see Ketty in a different light, not just for the sake of his sense gratification, whether he will admit it or not. I mean, this is our kind of, analysis on the basis of our knowledge and understanding. So at that point, because there was this sense gratification was in the background, then he started to see her in a different light. Like the memories of those days when they were, as Mother Krishnapriya pointed out, going out in the park and appreciating the beauty of nature together, and things like that. All those memories started to come back, and then he started to see her from a different perspective altogether. And in that platform, in that subtle bodily platform, a relationship developed, which culminated into deep friendship. So this is the difference. Now I'll request Chintamani to elaborate on what is the spirit, what do you mean by spiritual relationship?
By spiritual relationship, I meant one that was connecting the soul with the soul instead of the body, mind, intelligence, and anything that's covered by the material energy, rather the actual eternal spirit soul and its relationship with all the other eternal spirit souls and Krishna. And because our ultimate...
Okay, I'll ask you a question here. It's not a cross-examination. You say spiritual relationship is between soul to soul. Now, when living entities are oblivious of their spiritual identity as a soul, can they possibly develop that relationship? Can they?
I would say only if they're first, they get the knowledge first.
Yeah, they become situated on the spiritual plane first. Huh? So, okay. Now, how that spiritual, how can one become situated on the spiritual identity to begin with?
With spiritual knowledge. So, you can get that from scripture and realize that you're not the body, and then you start understanding that you are spiritual.
Okay, so here I will again make another point. Say you are in a dark room and there is incense stick burning, right? Some light is there from the incense stick burning. Now with that light, can you see your face in the mirror? Right. Now our consciousness is minute, even more minute than that light that is coming out from the burning of incense. It is just like a ray of light. Now can, with that ray of light, can you possibly see yourself? Can you with your own consciousness see your spiritual identity?
No.
No. Then how can you possibly see yourself?
Through a spiritual process that removes that covering.
Okay, so again, I will just go a little further on that. Okay, in a dark room with a incense stick burning, you cannot possibly see yourself in the mirror. You cannot see yourself. But when the sun comes up, then do you have any difficulty seeing yourself? Do you have any difficulty seeing the sun?
No.
Do you have any difficulty seeing all those who are around you? Okay, now who is, if your consciousness is like a speck of burning incense, then who is the sun here? Who is the sun? Krishna. Right? When we become Krishna conscious, right, then in the light of Krishna, with that light, with that consciousness, we can see Krishna and we can see ourselves and we can see everyone around. Right? So the point is, the spiritual relationship means the relationship that are based on Krishna consciousness. Yes, Lila Sukha?
I have a question on this point, because you had originally, or just a moment ago, asked, can two people love each other spiritually if they don't know who they are? And just maybe to play devil's advocate or something, I'm just wondering, because a lot of people don't necessarily have access to such highly advanced understanding of God consciousness. If a relationship is based on loving God, even if the two people don't really know who they are as an eternal spiritual being and they don't have a great wealth of knowledge about God, would you say that that was a spiritual relationship?
Well, there is some aspect of spiritualism in it, because God, you know, the acceptance of God is there, loving God is there, but still it is not pure spiritual relationship. Still, this relationship is based on body, the bodies, right? And the problem with that relationship is that no matter how intense, how genuine, how profound that relationship is, when one person dies, that relationship comes to an end. Because it is based on the bodily consciousness, with the disappearance of the body, the relationship terminates. Thank you. Thank you, Chintamani. So do you agree with me?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for enlightening us, Chintamani. Give her a hand. Wasn't it profound, Chintamani's presentation?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you learn something wonderful? And aren't you thankful to Chintamani for that? Thank you. Okay, next speaker. Are you tall enough? If you don't want to sit there, it's
okay. I'll sit here.
Sit here, it's better. Your name is Golata. Yeah. So Mother Govinda Lilamrita. Now, I would like you to enlighten us on the topic. Why do we need relationship?
Yes, a difficult question, but I'll try to say something. We need a relationship because it's actually our nature to be happy, and we cannot be happy if we are alone and if we don't have relationship. Like, no matter, I can tell some simple examples. Even in this material world, if somebody is very rich and very wonderful and beautiful, but if he's alone, he's not happy, and he just is hankering for some kind of relationship. So the rich people in this country are adopting children, are doing so much charity, because they just need that relationship. They just need
to feel that they're useful and that they can do something good for the other. And that's actually the feeling which can make us most happy.
Very good point. So if we need relationship in order to become happy.
Yes.
Now, does every relationship lead to happiness?
Not at all.
Okay. So maybe you can now define what kind of relationships lead to happiness.
That's right. Yeah. Relationship leads to happiness only if it helps us to progress in our spiritual life. I mean, I don't like to sound this like a cliche, but actually that's actually what the real love means. Real love means, in my understanding, that love is when you help...
Okay, so you actually made the point here that we need relationship for love.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
Out of relationship, the relationship that a loving relationship, from those relationships we derive happiness or joy. Yeah. So, maybe you can elaborate on that loving relationship.
Yes, you know, we can see not only between devotees, but also, I mean, among devotees, but also among non-devotees. I mean, I just don't like that word karma, but let's say non-devotees. I mean, people in the karmic world, I mean, among non-devotees, they just look like falling up so quickly and they're so happy, and after that, you know, nothing is there. And you know, in my country there is a very nice thing, that big love cannot be destroyed.
By the way, which is your country?
So big love cannot be destroyed. And how can one love who is big be destroyed? I mean, that's not possible. And sometimes we think, oh, we are so much in love and all, we are so happy and different, and after some time nothing is there from that relationship. And how can that love be big? I mean, therefore actually big love is only that love which cannot be destroyed. And real love actually means to help somebody in spiritual life. So to make him feel happy. So we can see also not only among non-devotees, but also among devotees. If Krishna is in the center, as you mentioned before, there are really no problems. And if Krishna is not exactly in the center, and we are sitting around, and we don't read together, and we don't serve our babies at home in a nice way and regularly, problems are going to come. But if we are really doing our sadhana good, there are no fights, there are no problems, nothing is there. So actually Krishna, as you mentioned Maharaj before, is the supreme person who is making us really to feel happy. Of course through Guru, I mean, I'm not on that level to connect directly with Krishna, but through my Guru and through the help of other Gurus who are kind of my Shiksha Gurus. You also get a big role in my life, instead my Guru. To the Guru, but I mean, Krishna should always be there in the center. I mean, I don't want to sound like cliche, but that's the point.
Very good, very good. Thank you, Govinda Lila. Now, I will just ask, how many of you are coming here for the first time? Please identify yourselves. Okay. Now, how are you relating yourself? Is it all right? What's going on? Can you? Or is it something that is where the discussions that are going on, does it make sense to you all? Or, yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure that these discussions are not just something very, very strange and flying over your heads. Yeah, okay, good. Good, thank you. Okay, now I need someone to define some factors that came up in course of this discussion. The first thing that I would like to ask somebody to define, like one point came up, quite prominently that, or it became quite obvious through this discussion, that we need relationships because we need love. Relationships means loving relationship. Relationship that are based on love, those relationships are desirable. There can be relationships based on hatred, and those relationships are obviously undesirable. Now I want some wise and bold personality to describe or define what love is. Any volunteers? Guru Gauranga, yeah, please. Come.
I would say that love is...
Come here.
My experience with love is not very great.
Switch it on.
Yeah, I don't have that much experience, but from understanding Prabhupada's, or trying to understand Prabhupada's books, what I've gathered is that love is wanting to selflessly give happiness to the beloved at any cost, even to one's own personal happiness. That's my understanding. Just like in the Shishatika is the verse, I am the Shishatika. So Radharani gives the nicest explanation of love, and I ask Maharaj to elaborate on that point because I'm not qualified.
Today I'm here to listen.
Maybe somebody else. But
good.
That is my feeling. That
very good point. Yeah. Like,
wanting to see the happiness of the beloved, even at the cost of great misery to oneself. We see that in human society. Sometimes the parent may sacrifice their life. Even in childbirth, sometimes mothers sacrifice, rather have the child survive than themselves, because it's unalloyed love. So I feel that love is that aspect of where somebody is just absorbed in the happiness of the beloved. And in order for that to happen, one has to be selfless and spiritually motivated, because unless you're spiritually motivated, you can't be selfless. You're selfish. So, I understand. And one other thing that I wanted to mention is that in the pursuit of relationships, love and happiness, I find the negative instruction is very, very good, because it encourages utsaha, enthusiasm, which is, you know, another word for being positive. So this positive thing, this positive energy, spiritual energy, utsaha, always being positive, seems to be a helpful instruction.
Good. Thank you, Guru Gauranga. Yes, Chandrasekhar, come sit here. Sit here.
Very short. One thing that came to mind is the definition that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives of love in the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Louder, please.
The definition. The definition that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm not mistaken, remembering it is this, that if there are all causes, all reasons for a relationship to break up, and yet the relationship does not break up, that is love.
Good. In spite of all reasons, the relationship doesn't break. Good. And that's all you wanted to? Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Anyone else? Yes? Archana, come.
kind of your class tonight where you're saying like love is actually a force, and like the same way we say that love can be blind, is like a force we can control or not, depend on our understanding. So when we being part and parcel of Krishna, naturally this force is directed toward Krishna. But due to our misconception of who we are directing this force, this love to other entities. But actually this force is naturally want to go, this love naturally want to go towards Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Natavar, you wanted to say something?
I was just thinking that if you take love beyond the body platform, then there's a lot of beautiful stories about Krishna story, Sudama, in Prabhupada getting love also, and also we see Yogamangala Thakur, the story of going to see
Chintamani,
that lady, and love, if you go beyond the bodily platform, love means giving, and when you give, it is so beautiful that the story of Shabri in Ramayana, the story of Sudama, and the story of Yogananda Thakur, and the story of Prabhupada, and the story of all devotees who are traveling every day and giving true love. So, conclusion is giving immense love.
Very good. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Yes. Yes, Brandon.
Yeah. As I was sitting here listening to all this, I kind of had a realization about love and what Krishna means to me. To be loved means that you will never have to be alone, because Krishna will always be in your heart, or the one who loves you will always be in your heart. And so to love is to give to that one thing that you love eternally, forever and always, so they will never have to be alone as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, Bhatti Gopal Prabhu.
Question. We've already established that our sense of self is false. We don't understand who we are. The example of being in a dark room and not even being able to see our face. The description of the body in two parts, the gross and subtle bodies and so on. If we poll everyone in the world and ask, who are you? In the overwhelming majority of responses, we won't find truth.
Yeah.
We'll find some sort of misconception or illusion. And yet, we poll everyone in the world and ask them what is love, surprisingly, I suspect that we get a lot of truth. So that strikes me as curious. How is it that people understand something intuitively or inherently about the nature of love, even when they don't have the slightest idea who they really are?
Yeah, so who did you direct the question to? No, we are actually having... Anyway, sorry.
Or to anyone. In other words, here, I'll admit that I don't know my spiritual identity. I suspect that I don't even have the slightest accurate understanding of how conditioned I am, or how little I know about who I am. I'm thinking that I'm a man of this particular age, born in this particular country, with these number of associates and these political associations and this kind of economic situation. All of this is not myself. So I'm entirely an illusion about who I am. And yet, if you ask me what is love, I'm convinced that I understand something about love.
Okay, since you asked me the question, asked me to answer the question, my first response will be, I beg to differ. You said that, you know, like most of the people, if asked what love is, they will give a correct understanding.
Yeah, let me qualify that. Obviously, the object of love, I mean, we presume that that's going to be a misunderstanding in most all cases.
Yeah.
But the nature of the loving sentiment itself, that's what I mean. In other words, the energy, the enthusiasm, the fundamental nature of that, you know, loving expression and the desire to be in love.
Yeah, right, right. Why I was, I mean, of course, although you are asking the question, everybody knows that you know the answer. But still, you know, just to make the point clear, I was just responding in that way. If we go back to Chaitanya Charitamrita, as Chandrasekhar mentioned, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is defining two things, love and lust. And he is saying that the desire to gratify our senses is lust. And the desire to gratify Krishna's senses or give pleasure to Krishna is love. So from that we can see that in this material nature, what actually goes on in the name of love, in most cases it is actually lust. It is stemming from the desire to gratify our senses. When we are oblivious of Krishna, then we do not actually know where to repose our love, where to offer that love. And that's why we find that love ultimately culminating into frustration, disappointment, and separation. So the point that I'm trying to make is that, as you said, the first part of your statement was that if we ask people what is their actual, who they are, they will not be able to give a correct answer. They do not know. It's not that they will admit that they do not know. They will rather, everybody will say that, yes, I know who I am. And the response will be their bodily identity. Right? So they identify themselves and give their identification according to the body. You ask somebody who you are, and what will be his immediate answer? How many people will say, I do not know? Rather, everybody will say, I am so and so, and so forth. But as you correctly pointed out, that they do not know their actual identity. Their identity, they are identifying themselves with a bodily designation. And similarly, just as they say that I know who I am, similarly they will say I know what love is. But in most cases the answer and the definition of their love is not the actual definition. Like in most cases we'll find that what they are describing as love is actually lust. And as Chintamani pointed out, the spiritual identity, spiritual, the loves or relationship based on spiritual platform is the relationship that is centered around Krishna and the relationship that is beginning with Krishna. Understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the beginning of understanding of what love actually is. Yes, Guru Gauranga.
Guru Maharaj, just in response to the question, another observation I had is that the question, what is love, is a higher cognitive question. You know, it's not asking what is your belief in love, it's just what is love. And people will tend to use their higher cognition, which is, you know, using the intelligence basically. It's not a rote question like, who are you? Well, I'm a white male who lives in America, etc. There's no exact answer. And then, because of the society we live in, everybody's read poetry and they start filtering through all of this, and then they tend to come up with some quasi-spiritual idea of love. But do they act...
Not quasi-spiritual, rather quasi-sentimental.
Sentimental, yeah.
Yeah.
But how many of them act on that, on what they explain as their understanding of love? Their belief in love is only found in the, you know, in their actions, I believe. Mm. So I think people's explanations of love are not necessarily their activities in love or their, you know, the way that they actually act in their loving relationships. It's an idea that they may have gleaned from television or some poetry or whatever. Because if you ask me what is love and I don't know anything about the Vedas, then I'll just start thinking about poetry and, you know, what the poet said or what I saw on some soap. Because I'm not going to admit that my, you know, my belief or my activities in love are so grounded in the mundane. Because nobody wants to admit that. So I think that may be a reason why it, you know, apparently appears that people are, you know, a little bit more advanced than they generally are.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like that.
Yeah, good point, yeah. Very good point. Like, they're giving certain understanding of love, which actually is not the real thing. It's some concept that they have derived. But the important factor is that everybody has a craving for it deep down themselves. Like there is a craving. Everybody wants love. Deep down they're feeling that I need it. I need to love somebody and I want to be loved by somebody. As Brandon just pointed out, that love is that not wanting to be alone. Like that is, you see, I want somebody to love, somebody to be with whom I can love and whom I can derive love from. Like that reminds me of Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea. The first sentence of that book is, "No man is an island." And anyway, to sum it up, I mean, I will just make a little elaboration on that. What Archana just said, I'll just elaborate on that point. She actually made a very, very important point in that respect, in defining what love is. She described that love is a force. Love actually is an energy that is existing with the soul. The soul has a few factors, few qualities, few phenomena inherently related to it, or him. Like, one is consciousness. Wherever there is a soul, there is consciousness. Wherever there is consciousness, there is desire. So along with the soul comes consciousness, comes desire, and comes love, the desire to love somebody. So love is actually a force. Love is actually an energy which unites us. We can see love brings us together. Hatred separates us. So from this we can see love is actually an energy that unites us. Love is an energy that unites a soul with, actually this energy is meant to unite or connect the soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A living entity, a spirit soul, is a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the factor, the energy that unites a soul, connects the soul with the Lord, is love. Now, by establishing that relationship, when the love becomes fulfilled, then automatically, spontaneously, it gives rise to joy. Now we can see why we want love. Because from love we want to derive joy. But when the love is not offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when we are oblivious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when we do not know where to offer this love actually, then we try to offer this love to different other objects or individuals. And by offering that, we try to derive joy. But we do not get that. Because that is not what our heart is hankering for. Our heart is actually hankering, our real craving is to become connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the only purpose of this energy called love. And you know who is the supreme repository, the supreme reservoir of that energy? Who is that supreme reservoir of that energy? Srimati Radharani. And Krishna is the object of love, and the source of that love, the reservoir of that love, is Srimati Radharani. And this love is called bhakti. When this love, our heart's inherent craving to become connected to Krishna, when it finds its ultimate object of love, Krishna, then the heart automatically becomes satisfied. And then this love is expressed in through some action. And that action is called service. We want to do something. When we love somebody, we want to express our love by doing something for that object of our love. So when we love Krishna, when we rather offer our love to Krishna, and when this energy is properly directed towards the ultimate object of that love, then our heart not only becomes satisfied, it becomes full of joy. And that is the ultimate goal of everyone's life. What everyone is hankering for ultimately is joy. In Sanskrit, it is called ananda, bliss. So everyone is hankering for that ananda, joy. And the joy is derived when our love is offered to Krishna. So the ultimate object of our love, ultimate object of all our relationship is actually Krishna. And it is through Krishna that all other relationships develop, because everyone else is a part and parcel of Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, everyone else is his part and parcel, everyone else is connected to him. When we develop our relationship with him, then automatically our relationship with others are also established. That the others are not actually the object of our love. Rather, our love for Krishna is reflected on different objects, different personalities, different individuals, in the form of friendship, in the form of affection, and in the form of disregard. Those who are connected to Krishna, those who are in love with Krishna, towards them we develop friendship. Those who are innocent about Krishna, those who are ignorant about Krishna, but when they are properly exposed to Krishna, then they also will become related to Krishna. They will also fall in love with Krishna. Towards them we have compassion, affection. Oh, they do not know Krishna. Let me go and give him Krishna. So it is actually our love for Krishna is being reflected on them in that way, in the form of compassion. And those who are averse to Krishna, those who are opposed to Krishna, those who do not want to even get to know Krishna or hear about Krishna, that same love for Krishna is reflected on them in the form of disregard. Okay, fine. You don't want to know Krishna, I don't have anything to do with you. So in this way, this love for Krishna are reflected on three types of individuals in three different ways. Friendship, compassion, disregard. So the bottom line is, actually, it is the energy that is there in everyone's heart, with every spirit soul. And therefore every spirit soul is searching for the right object where to offer that love. And by offering that love, they are searching for the supreme joy, bliss, ecstasy. But only when it is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is actually the real recipient of that love, our heart becomes completely content and full of joy. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Now, I will ask you a question. How many of you have offered your love to Krishna? Please raise your hands. And by doing that, how many of you feel that now your heart has become content, your love, your craving for love has found the ultimate object? Now, by doing that, is there anyone who still feel that your heart is not content in spite of doing that? Is there anyone who feels that way?
Yeah. But I just wanted to say something.
Yeah.
It makes the heart content and very satisfied to offer to Krishna, but it makes the heart even more content to engage others, encouraging them to offer the love to Krishna.
Okay. But now maybe you can describe why. Like, you have, by offering your love to Krishna, you have felt contentment. But when you offer it to others, you feel more content.
No, no. When I try to engage others to offer their love to Krishna.
Okay. And that's the same. Good. Thank you. Thank you. They keep doing that. And, well, again, I'll make one small comment, that is actually an expression of your love to Krishna. Because you love him, therefore you want that everybody should love him. And that's why you're trying to bring everyone to him. Okay, yes, Udayananda Prabhu.
The last chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, after he says, Sarvadhamma Parityakta Mami Tam Saranam Gacchami, abandoning everything, he says, surrender to me. Then afterwards, he says, those who appreciate this conversation that we just had, Arjuna, worship me with their intelligence. And if you give this to others, if you give this information to other people, he said, there is no person more dear to me than those people who give it to others, nor will there ever be anyone more dear. So why is it makes you feel so happy? Is that Krishna has explained, this is what makes me happy. So Krishna is happy when we are giving this to everyone else. Prabhupada used to say, self-realization isn't selfish realization, it is selfless. When you're ready to give everything to others, and Prabhupada demonstrated that himself in such a perfect way, that he came over to this continent, and he was giving all of himself, all of his time and energy to people he didn't even know. They were not even his countrymen, right? He basically had never been out of the continent, he's never been out of India. And he came just to give to others. So Krishna, so of course he pleased Krishna so nicely. So we have to also love Krishna like that. And that's why you feel so good when you give it to others.
Very good. Thank you, Dhananda Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Any other question or comment? Yes, Sita? Okay, yeah, it's, I pointed out that it was actually a reflection of our love to Krishna. See, people, those who do not, or rather those who are averse to Krishna, if we go and try to, like when we love somebody, what do we want to do? We want to speak about that person all the time. Now, you see, to the other devotees who are in love with Krishna, why we develop friendship? Because we love to, we get an opportunity to discuss with them about Krishna. We speak to them about Krishna and we hear about Krishna from them. Right? So that's why it's developing into friendship. Those who are innocent, we go to them and speak to them about Krishna because we love him. That love for Krishna is being reflected in this way. And we speak to them, and because they do not know about Krishna, they get to know about Krishna and become attracted to Krishna. But those who are averse to Krishna, when you go and speak to them about Krishna, what will happen? They'll become more averse. That's why it's better that we avoid them. And at the same time, pray for them that someday they become Krishna conscious. And that's why we give them prasad. You know, we are not, you see, we are not averse to them. But we kind of stay away from them for the time being. So that, you know, they become mature enough, they are going to listen to. Thank you. Okay. Maybe you can have another question, last question. Bhati Gopal Prabhu, do you have any comment? Okay, I mean, I was just... Lochan Prabhu, do you have any comment?
Servant. And so at every moment we're serving. Yani we're serving our family or our friends or so on. And he said that service is always never completely reciprocated unless we expose that service to Krishna.
Krishna, yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point that Lochan Prabhu brought up. That you see, love and service are synonymous or interlinked. Like love is expressed in the form of service. Now when we do not become engaged in serving Krishna, then this serving propensity remains and we continue to serve different other individuals. But the thing is, what we are actually hankering for out of the service, we do not get that in return. That's a very good point, Lachan Prabhu. Thank you.
Back to that idea of the question about disregard and avoiding people who are opposed to Krishna or hearing about Krishna. And you said that that doesn't mean that we are averse to them or that we dislike them or don't wish them well and so on. But it's also a recognition that I'm not the supreme personality of God. I have limited potency. But I also know that Krishna doesn't ever disregard anyone.
Right.
My confidence in Krishna is absolute, faithful attention to every one of those souls, even though I may not be able to do anything to help someone.
Good.
I never ever abandon anyone, and he's a supreme mystic, so I'm confident that he's always working for everyone's welfare.
Exactly, yeah, right. Right, that's very true. And also it brings up another point that you see, devotion has three levels, you can say, or there are three kinds of devotees. One is a neophyte devotee, a second class devotee, and first class devotee. The neophyte devotee, the one who is new in Krishna consciousness, his attitude is, yes, Krishna is God, and I am His only devotee. So he recognizes Krishna, but he doesn't recognize other devotees. That's Kanishtha Adhikari, or neophyte devotee. The second class devotee is one who is in love with Krishna, who has friendship with devotees, who has compassion for the innocent, and who has disregard for the offenders. So that's the second class devotee. And the first class devotee is he who feels that everybody else has become a devotee, only I couldn't become a devotee. So it's just the reverse, you see. A neophyte devotee thinks that I am the only devotee, but the first class devotee thinks that everybody else is a devotee, but I couldn't become a devotee. And it's natural. It is not just some poetic expression, but it is real. That's how a pure devotee feels, and that's why a pure devotee or a neophyte or a first class devotee cannot preach because he can't discriminate. You know, when you think that everybody else is a devotee and you couldn't become a devotee, how can you go to them and preach to them about Krishna? Therefore Prabhupada said that Uttamadhikari devotee comes down to the Madhyamadhikar platform, and a first class devotee comes down to the second class platform in order to preach. And Prabhupada himself is an example. Like, he's a first class devotee from the spiritual sky, came down to the second class platform in order to preach. Because in order to preach, you have to discriminate who is a devotee and who is innocent and so forth. Whereas Uttamadhikari devotee cannot do that. Thank you. Okay, yes, Rukmini?
Could you give us a definition of karma and prema from Krishna? Because when you talk about how the definition of prema is to have the body that's with Krishna, and then you talk about how that reflects into the friendship that you already have. disregard. And that covers all the vanity and Krishna. What about the spiritual master work?
The one looks up to the spiritual master. You see, again, this is a combination of respect and love. Not a direct love, but this love is actually, again, you see, ultimate object of love is actually Krishna. Our, that energy that is there in our hearts is only meant to be offered to Krishna. He is the only recipient. And what the spiritual master does, he teaches others how to offer that love to Krishna. He is just a via medium. Like he is training them to offer it to Krishna. And a disciple looks up to the spiritual master with respect, like a teacher, like a father, and like a friend. So that is the relationship. Like a spiritual master is actually an embodiment of these three relationships. Depending, like for example, you know, with Prabhupada, we had, you know, like generally we had, you know, the relationship like that of a teacher and student, relationship like that of a father and child. And only very few actually had the kind of relationship with Prabhupada like that of friend. Very few actually. We never, at least I never, you know, my attitude towards Srila Prabhupada was complete awe and reverence. So it would depend upon the individuals. Like, you know, like spiritual master, you know, when develops the relationship, the disciple develops the intimacy, spiritual master may allow that friendship. But one, a disciple doesn't go out of his way and start dealing with the spiritual master as if he's his friend. Yes, Udayananda Prabhu?
Krishna addresses that situation of the living entity who's in his ignorance, who's blinded in the dark room. He actually said that sitting in front of him, Krishna, Upadik Shanti Shayanam, Janina Satadarshana. Just try to approach the spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service, Pri Krishna Sevaya. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you, for he has seen the truth. So he's like not one of us in the dark room with the incense. He's more like has a bonfire, he's got a big fire going, and it's blazing fire, he can see. Self darkness. So Krishna explains that if you want to know me, you have to go approach my pure devotee. You want to know me, that's how you will know.
Yeah, right. That's why the relationship is like that of a teacher and student.
And then Krishna also says, one who thinks he is my devotee is not my devotee, but one who is a devotee of my devotee, he's my devotee. So the spiritual master is imperative.
Okay, so tomorrow again we'll start at 7:30, and so do you think it's moving in the right direction? Did you all like it? So now contemplate on what happened today. And tomorrow we will take you to another level. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.